is Margaret Anderson, and the topic is Parenting for Peace and Justice. As a forethought, I'm going to read a little paragraph by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. that I think says a lot about our lives right now. I've often thought there ought to be a manual to hand to little kids, telling them what kind of planet they're on, why they don't fall off it, how much time they've probably got here, how to avoid poison ivy, and so on. I tried to write one once. It was called Welcome to Earth, but I got stuck on explaining why we don't fall off the planet. Gravity is just a word. It doesn't explain anything. If I could get past gravity, I'd tell them how we reproduce, how long we've been here, apparently, and a little bit about evolution. And one thing I would really like to tell them about is cultural relativity. I didn't learn until I was in college about all the other cultures, and I should have learned that in first grade. A first grader should understand that his or her culture isn't a rational invention, that there are thousands of other cultures, and they all work pretty well, that all cultures function on faith rather than truth, that there are lots of alternatives to our own society. Cultural relativity is defensible and attractive. It's also a source of hope. It means we don't have to continue this way if we don't like it. And maybe that's what we're going to talk about today. We live in a pretty violent society, and I personally don't like it. And I'm real concerned that we're raising a generation of children who are so surrounded by everyday violence that they're getting desensitized to it. And, what is shocking anymore, even to a little kid? It's so pervasive. And what's the difference between what they see on television and what's real? Can they tell? There are some good resources available, and I'm going to share some of them with you today. Most of these are available in the Holden bookstore, or else hopefully where you come from they have a good bookstore that would have some of these things. A real basic book for this issue is called Parenting for Peace and Justice. It's written by Kathleen and James McGinnis. And unfortunately, or fortunately, the bookstore has sold out of them this week. So, it's sort of good news and bad news. People are buying them anyway, but I don't have one to show you today. But it's kind of a small paperback book. But it gives you the philosophy, gives you the support you might feel you need, and the suggestions of how you might want to instill these things within your family life. And it's a real good basic book to have. Another one that the bookstore does have is called A Manual on Nonviolence in Children, and this is put together by Stephanie Judson. And this is a very practical thing. It has lots and lots of stuff in it on problem solving, conflict resolution, sharing, affirmation, all sorts of those good words that we all would like to think we use with our kids, but just exactly how you go about some of this stuff. There's a nonviolence and children's program. It's based in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and their theme has been empowerment in an age of anxiety. And they say, we define empowerment as the process of becoming hopeful and in charge of one's own life, which leads to participation in social change. As significant adults in children's lives, whether we are teachers, parents, or concerned friends, it is our task to provide children with hope for the future. In addition, we need to find ways for children to take action in their immediate lives to counterbalance the feelings of hopelessness and powerlessness that are intensified by the threat of nuclear war. In order to feel hopeful about the future, we must first feel good about ourselves, learn to empathize with others, find a supportive community, build confidence through solving our own problems, and make beauty and joy a part of our lives. And I'd like to share with you some means that I have found of maybe doing this with children, either in home or if you're teaching or whatever your concern is, you must have contact with children in one form or another, you wouldn't be here. Part of it is cultivating a good home life, and this Stephanie Judson has put together five elements that she thinks have to be in a home where children will learn to be peacemakers. One is affirmation of each other. Two is sharing of feelings, information, and experience in order to learn to understand others. Three is a supportive community that allows people to work together on problems. Four, practical experience for children on different ways to solve problems. And five, a sense of enjoying life together. A home where these are experienced develops in children a sense of well-being and wholeness, one that contradicts the feelings of helplessness and powerlessness that we have in our modern world. The most important way of going about something like this, and maybe some of you have already found this, but you need a parent support group, and they're around, and there are ways to find them depending on where you live. If you're in a real small area, you might have to form one. And maybe you've never talked about some of these issues with other people, but you may be surprised to find there are other parents who are concerned about this type of thing. And by joining forces, you develop a support network where you can call each other up, or you can get together to brainstorm, or you can do some planning together. But it creates an atmosphere for you to feel good about yourselves and enables you to create and model for your children some of the disciplines that you would hope to instill in them. So a parent support group is real important. And one of the obvious things that would come out of that would be providing a good example for kids. These sound real obvious, but it's amazing how we let things slip by. We send double messages, just like the government, our world sends double messages. We give our kids maybe certain toys to play with, and then we tell them, now don't hit anybody, don't shoot anybody. You know, well, why did we give them the toy in the first place? Did we think they were going to take the gun and bake a cake, mm-hmm. or what did mm-hmm. we expect? And it's just like the government, we're going to build bigger and better missiles and weapons, but we're not going to use them, we're just going to have them. It's hard for kids to sort that out. It's hard for adults to sort that out. So we might be careful about what we say. We need to be the kind of persons we want our children to become. And unless we believe an ideal is important enough to incorporate into our own lives, it's doubtful whether the kids will be able to teach it, whether we will be able to teach it to our kids. So role modeling is real important in how we handle conflict in the home, how we react to it in the community, and how we relate to violence in the world. Do we just shrug our shoulders, or do we talk about it? It's out there, and we can't pretend it's not out there, but I think if we talk about it, so the kids know where we're coming from, how we view it, that there is value on these human lives that are lost, whether it's in family violence or whatever sort of violence is going on. The kids hear about it or see it in the newspaper or something, and it's important to talk about it so they get some insight into where you're coming from, so they can make some intelligent decisions themselves. And also to de-emphasize our differences, whether they're sexual, cultural, or racial. We're really all basically human beings, and that's a real tough one. Kids want to think they're better or they're different, or this kid is, you know, from a different country, how can we like them? Maybe it's a Russian child. Well, the more you get to know about them, a Russian child is not that different from a little American child. And that would be a real neat thing for kids to know and understand. And this book's been around for a long time, Free to Be You and Me, and deals a lot with equality of kids, whether it's sexual equality or big and little or whatever, but lots of fun stories, poems, songs, and things. If you haven't seen it, that's a real good one. Another book that I really, really like, and I think it makes an excellent gift, rather than giving your kid a transformer maybe for his birthday, give him this book. Or somebody's having a baby, give him this People book. It's a beautiful book about the differences all over the world. And then the pictures are so fun. It's something that kids would really like. It is very strange. Some people even hate others because they are unlike themselves, because they are different. They forget that they too would seem different if they could only see themselves through other people's eyes. But imagine how dreadfully dull this world of ours would be if everybody would look, think, eat, dress, and act the same. Now, isn't it wonderful that each and every one of us is unlike any other? It's really a nice book. We need to help children experience forgiveness. To become peacemakers, children need to experience forgiveness from their parents when they make mistakes, and they must also be helped to learn to forgive others who wrong them. That's real tough for a kid. And if we keep bringing up stuff that the kids have done 3 weeks ago, hold that over their head forever, they're never going to learn that there is an aspect of forgiveness in life. And we have to show them that we love them and forgive the act, whatever it was, so that they can acquire the knowledge they need to become reconcilers in the conflict situations they'll meet later on in their lives. One of my more obvious points is on war toys, and especially for some reason boys seem to like war toys and want them, but that doesn't mean we have to give them to them. At Christmas in Minneapolis, they had a small campaign. There's a couple groups, Friends for a Nonviolent World and Women Against Military Madness, who were especially asking that people specifically not buy the new Rambo doll or G.I. Joe doll. These dolls present a glorification of violence, teach that people who are different from Americans must be dealt with violently, and portray a simplified view of the world, good versus evil. It's always real clear cut in those toys. They had a petition to sign to send to Coleco about the Rambo doll, and asked that people give gifts that promote constructive rather than destructive values. And that is something we could do. There's a couple addresses here for these two groups, but you can always write to these companies. You know, there are certain toy companies that make a lot of money by creating things like that, and they create them to appeal just to that particular issue, and it's disconcerting at best. I've got a couple toys along here that I'm ashamed to admit came from our house. Sort of exemplify that. This particular one is, I don't know what they're called. I have no idea, but they're wrestlers of some sort. And this guy represents the United States, and this guy represents Russia. And of course, you know who is supposed to win. And I guess, you know, if you're going to have wrestler dolls, why couldn't they just be wrestler dolls? We have to always make Russia the bad guy. And there are a lot of little things like this. I don't know where this came from. This is, I will explain this, but, you know, they all have these little gadgets. They all have little tiny guns and all sorts of weapons. And there are other toys that a kid can have. We had an experience at Christmas with Christmas Day. We have two nephews that are like 4 and 3, and we haven't seen them for a year at least. Come out of town, and they came like around noon on Christmas Day, rang the doorbell, and we greeted them all. And these little guys came in. One was carrying a shotgun, and one was carrying a pistol. And they just came shooting their way into the house. And we kind of, our mouths fell open, and off they went. And they get aggressive when they've got a toy like that. You know, if they'd come in with their teddy bears, they would have come in and played teddy bears or something. But no, they ran around shooting all of us. And it was Christmas Day. I was real offended. But they weren't my kids. And my husband did say something to his sister, and she said, "Oh, I didn't know you didn't like guns." And I mean, we spent the day trying to disarm these two little children. And every time we walk into the living room, there'd be a shotgun under the Christmas tree. It was ridiculous. And as soon as they get hold of the guns, they immediately got more hyperactive. And it was always kind of violent. My daughter ended up in her closet, in her bedroom, toward the end of the afternoon, trying to read, because she was driving her nuts. They were after her all the time. And, you know, she would have been glad to play with them, but she didn't want to have a war. So those kinds of toys, I suppose there's more on here. They're just all, you know, they've all got tricky little things that they do that are horrible. So, avoid them if you can, I guess. There, research has shown that playing with toy guns promotes aggression and antisocial behavior. And children associate guns with violence, of course. So, their play on gun things generalize into other aggressive activity. And I guess we don't need that. While I'm on toys, I've got one other one here, and I don't have the worst of them, and they kind of, I think, are insidious because they're cards that come like baseball cards with, you know, 4 to a pack with bubble gum. And they only cost a quarter, so your kid has a little money burning a hole in his pocket and comes home from the drugstore with a couple packs of these cards and starts collecting them and then trading them with friends. And finally, I look at the cards, and they're horrible. They're called Garbage Pail Kids, and they have little pictures of freaky babies. Here's Beth Death. It's a little person that looks like Death. And Harry Mary or Busted Bob is a little person who's in pieces. And Creepy Carol is just deformed and horrible. I mean, they're offensive, real offensive, in the name of humor. And that's what's so insidious, I think. The kids think they're funny, and they think it's funny to have Busted Bob all in pieces. And I found them real offensive. And the fact that some somebody thought this up and figured this was a good way to make a lot of money off of children really offends me. And hopefully offends you. And that's another place that could be written to or destroyed. I know in some schools they've outlawed them because kids were trading them, and I appreciate the fact that schools were smart enough to realize how crummy they were. Another thing along war toy lines is the cereal. Have you ever seen G.I. Joe cereal? I think that's one pass these around, I think. This is on the shelf of the grocery store. It was quite alarming. The first box I ever saw, the guy was holding a machine gun. This is breakfast cereal that you would set in front of your child in the morning before he goes off to school. And gear up for action. G.I. Joe action mission. And there's all sorts of junk on it, you know, that you can send for, and subtle little things for you to do. Nobody becomes an action star without complete and proper nutrition. You can imagine how nutritious this is. That's why G.I. Joe Action Stars brand cereal is a wholesome blend of wheat, rice, oats, and corn packed with 9 essential vitamins and minerals. You'll feel confident knowing G.I. Joe Action Stars buttered toast, milk, and fruit juice make a complete and balanced breakfast. And best of all, this vitamin-fortified goodness comes in an action mission box. Your own action star will find exciting enough to ask for. That's a good reason to make G.I. Joe Action Stars the strategic first step in your Joe's mission day. Well, a friend of mine had bought this. I'm pleased to say I didn't pay money for this box. But, you know, what kind of a message is that we give the kids? They sit there, there's a guy in the back running through the jungle with a gun up, looking for the enemy. Is this how you want to send your kid off to school in the morning? Kind of inspired. And that's made by Ralston. I just think it's appalling. And I'm sure there are other cereals maybe of the same bent, but this is the most obvious one I ever found. Another obvious thing is to avoid entertainment glorifying violence, and that's easier said than done. I know I have 3 kids, and you can only control so much of what they watch, and the ones that frighten me are the seemingly innocuous things like Saturday morning cartoons. Sit down there someday and watch Bugs Bunny. And Bugs Bunny is violent. They run around, they club each other over the head, they tie people to railroad tracks or animals or whatever. It is violent. And the thing about the violence is, they never die. There are never consequences to their violence. And can the kids sort that out? I mean, they tied Bugs Bunny, some preacher tied him to the railroad tracks, and the train comes along, you know, and the next scene he's running down the road chasing this thing and hitting it over the head. Oh, you know, children perceive these things maybe not with the same sense of reality that we do. But these creatures don't die. And the same with television programs. There's lots of killing on television, but you don't see the family at home mourning and the funeral and all that. They leave the bodies on the road and go off chasing in the cars. It's real hard to disassociate that type of violence with violence in everyday life.
I would like to really agree with you on that statement. I had a conversation with my youngest child one day, and it wasn't about violence. It was about doing something. I think I was going on a bike trip, and I wanted to know if he wanted to come. I don't remember. No, it was something else, and I used the bike trip as an analogy. And he said, "Oh, I don't want to do that. I've seen that on TV." and I said, do you think that seeing it on TV is the same as doing it? And he said, yes. And I said, when you see someone ride a bicycle, is that the same as when you ride a bicycle? And that child had to stop and think a minute. Because, and my kids, I don't think, watch that much television, but television is so pervasive in our society that they don't, as a child, that reality gets really screwed up. And unless you really talk to your child, you don't even realize that that's happening.
And I think it's even worse because it's in your house. You know, when they go to the movie, maybe it's a little more pretend because it's a big screen and all, but when it's in your house and everybody has VCRs now, and we will forbid our children to go to certain movies. One we had a real battle over this year was Rocky IV. The way Rocky apparently pummots this Russian today, I think he dies. He just beats the heck out of the guy till he's dead. I mean, in the name of the sport of boxing. And then, of course, everybody cheers because he killed the Russians. And I just, the whole thing was so offensive. And our kids couldn't understand why they were the only ones who couldn't go to this movie, no matter how many times we explained it. And my fear was, I knew sooner or later they would see it because everybody we know has a VCR and they will be over, you think they're playing at somebody's house and they'll come home 3 hours later and name some horrible things they've been sitting watching. And sure enough, two of them did eventually see Rocky IV next door. But we had taken a stand and they knew how we felt, so I knew that when they saw that movie, they had those things on their mind. And they were not looking at it innocently. They already knew that we didn't approve of what happens in this movie. And I think you've got to take a stand and you can't shelter them. It's impossible. But if you can share some of these values with them and talk about them enough and incorporate them enough in your life, that they will then be able to sort some of this out.
Maybe another way of dealing with that is to watch it with them and then talk about it.
That would be another way to do it.
I remember another time, it's very rarely that I watch television, but on a Sunday night, family TV time, and it was listed on our television, we don't have a VCR or cable, as a family television program, and I think it was called, I don't know, so many hours, 36 hours, 48 hours, I can't remember what it was. But I was appalled when I sat down and watched it with my children because of the violence directed towards women in this movie, literally being portrayed. And this was supposed to be a family comedy. Has anybody seen that movie? 24. And I was just really astonished. And I really, my immediate reaction was, I'm going to write the station, or at least the people who wrote on our TV thing, that this was a movie for families. Women were treated, there's this one scene where they're in a bar and he's going to go up to bed with her and then he sort of tosses her aside and he's off on a big chase and then he comes back and he says, where is she? You know, just degrading. And
did you talk about that then?
Oh yeah, they were real clear that I thought that was appalling. And I think the commercials are another thing. You don't even have to watch the program. My kids would sit there mesmerized by a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing of it is I've done the same thing myself, and I can't even figure out what it is that's so capturing, because it isn't even the program you're watching. The only time I find it truly annoying is if you happen to have a good movie on and you want to go to bed and it goes on for 3 hours because they have so many commercials. But that you would sit there as an intelligent human being and be drawn into that commercial, I literally either have to stand in front of the TV or turn it off to talk to my children that that thing is on. It's amazing the power of that machine. And I think that's one of the problems that children have for inability to concentrate in school, because a teacher cannot compete with the kind of action that is on the television screen.
How few of those kids are watching that TV 12 hours, 14 hours a day? And they turn it on in the morning and they watch it, you know, until the school bus picks them up, and then they go to school, and as soon as they hit the home again.
And that becomes life to them.
Yeah, and the desire to have a real one-to-one relationship with another human being. I mean, when you talk about your children going out to play and they end up in front of a television set somewhere else, that's not playing. That's not using their imagination or their creativity or acting out things that are in their home life. It's merely sitting there and being.
I'm a speech and language commissioner. I work with kids with communication handicaps, and that's one of the problems that they have, because they can't communicate. You know, they just don't have the verbal skills to problem solve. They're not readers.
Yeah.
They wouldn't think.
The problem solving is they don't think logically, because everything on TV is not necessarily logical.
And the time frame is so different.
Mm-hmm. I have a TV that was given to us. We weren't going to have any at all. This is a gift. The way it's a Sony, and you can program it. It turns on to whatever you program to the first station, which is our PBS station. That's all my kids have ever watched. And you can scramble the rest of it, don't even see any commercial TV. Mm-hmm. And that's really what they've only watched unless they go to a friend's house and find out what else there is in the world.
Do they talk about wanting TV?
Not really.
It's not a big issue.
I tell them that, you know, that's just something I don't want you to watch. You know, they're still pretty young. They're 8 and 4. And my daughter's only watched Channel 10. Since she was little, and that's all we have in our house, you know. But I was thinking, in terms of movies, one Christmas they went to see a Care Bear movie, and I can't even find movies that my kids can go to. I mean, this thing, I had people's spirits and all kinds of stuff in there. And the ones that maybe they were like Disney, and I, you know, like Disney, but I don't want my kids watching any of that stuff either. You know, it's just the evil spirit that, you know, I think there are evil spirits, and they don't have to be portrayed in such vivid color and shown.
And it scares them.
I do think you need a sense of balance, though, because your children need to be able to deal with the reality of the rest of the people who are in society. Mm-hmm. And they need to. I'm not suggesting that you show them these movies.
It's the problem of I don't think they can become tolerant of people that are different. If you're so sheltering and so protecting, they're going to grow up extremely narrow-minded, and they're not going to have exposure.
And I see you look at ideas. Friends. I mean, how they get it from friends anyway? Mm-hmm. I don't
That's
see where
true.
People have been so sheltered that they're shocked to definitely see something violent.
No, I think if you're able to and strong enough to stick with something like that, it's admirable, you know, especially as they get older and maybe exert more pressure. Another important point, which I think is an interesting point, is to de-emphasize possessions, whether it's a television or what. But much conflict in the world is about who owns what. And toning down the need for possessions will take care of much of the source of this conflict. And it's kind of, I saw a bumper sticker. It was in a toy store, of course, on our way out here. And it said, "The kid who has the most toys wins." I know families where they do have every toy that's comes out, they've got it, and the other kids think it's wonderful, and then, you know, it creates a disharmony among the children. They covet these toys, and yet the kids who've got them then have to protect them. And it's just sort of the more is better kind of philosophy, and that's just not true.
How do you deal with a situation where the child does not have more, but that which the child has, they don't want any of them messing around with, and therefore it creates conflict in the home, because one child will touch the other person's belongings and child A has a fit.
These are siblings?
Yes.
So part of it probably is more than just a struggle over the possession. It's kind of a power thing too. The one who has the toy is able to hold that over the other child. Anybody have any suggestions?
We have two girls that are real close in age, and they do that all the time. And I found that certain toys, they really identify with as their toy. And so we have like one, maybe two things that are just Jill's or just Katie's, and they know that that is just theirs, and then the rest are more shared. But they feel okay about it because this is theirs, and they know that, and that's not touchable by the other child. So it's, if you just give them one that's theirs, it seems like that's enough. If the others aren't so important, but then they can, this is mine. But I think one of them is a tape recorder. The cage just got sold for Fisher Price tape recorder. Jill cannot touch that. She knows that.
And part of it is
she weighs it from her feet. Mine.
But part of it is too their need to protect the thing from being destroyed or lost or whatever. It,
I wonder if part of that isn't a developmental stage to, you know, like the ages that they're at, they need to learn about, you know, like you said, a protectiveness, but also a possession, you know, the mind, and like even little toddlers, you know, we'll talk about mind. And then after they learn that, then they can start learning to share and realizing that, you know, it's mine, but, you know, you can use it, and you're going to give it back, and it's okay to share things, you know, you don't like it, you can have it from yourself.
And as they get a little older, they can come to an understanding of what really is important in life. If they had, the house was burning down, what would be the most important thing? Would it be the people, or would it be this particular item? Possessions are replaceable, and people aren't. And I think as kids get older, they maybe can grasp a better understanding of the lack of importance of possessions. If they're not important to you, but if you've got to have, you know, the biggest car in the street, or you've got to have the latest of everything, then they're going to model that too. They're going to have to have the biggest and best. I know people like that.
And yeah.
Go ahead.
We interviewed some kids that were in fifth and sixth grade for a project we were doing, and we asked them, what is it out of your family that you remember or that you like the best? And all of them said trips or family going out and doing something special. It wasn't my TV or what I'm given for Christmas. It's when we do something together. Every one of them said that. I couldn't believe it. I would have never guessed that for them.
That's a real interesting thing to remember. You know what? That we can't buy their love by just equipping them with junk or things or whatever. Another thing we need to do to create an atmosphere in our homes of peace, a peaceful atmosphere, is to tone down war expectancies. Worries and doom predictions can be self-fulfilling. Parents can help their children to be peacemakers by not teaching them that war is inevitable in the future. That's a real awful burden for a kid to live with. And we need to talk more about war and peace so that they understand what it means and what war does and why there are wars, and biblical stuff. I know if you try to read Bible stories to the kids, there's lots of violence, and it needs to be discussed, and the wars understood, and where we are nowadays, in the peace and war issues and why we're so concerned, so that they understand what's happening both in their world and in the international scene of conflict and terrorism. And they're going to see it in the paper, and we need to discuss it a little bit, not instill fear in them, but discuss it. It diffuses the subject for them if it's discussed and it's, you know, something they feel comfortable with coming to you and sharing their fears. And it also gives them a perspective on what attitudes they should take towards these situations. So that's an important thing to maybe take time. We need to deal with the world issues depending on the ages of the children, whether you're teaching school or your parents at home. It can be done on a real elementary level, or it can get more involved the older they get. A real important thing that's maybe harder to do than it sounds is stressing cooperative play. In our Western world, we have overstressed competitive activities, in case you haven't noticed. Our competitive sports probably do not make for peace-mindedness. There's too much feeling about winning over some other person or group. And cooperative players in an orchestra make better music than competitive players. You can't be trying to outplay your fellow violinists and make any kind of music. So kids need to learn that a spirit of cooperativeness also is less likely to lead to conflict than one of competition. And that's something I'm real encouraged by, kind of the stuff that's happening nowadays. And this is one thing that's happening. And we've done some of this at Holden, and I know it's being done in some schools, and it's the new games book. And then there's the more new games books. There's about three of them in the bookstore here. And these are non-competitive kinds of things that kids can do and have fun with. And it doesn't mean someone has to win and someone else has to lose. It doesn't, you don't have to be a winner in order to have fun. And, I was at a workshop this winter, and this woman in St. Paul had wanted her kids to participate in the park board activities, but every single thing offered was a competitive situation, whether it was soccer or whatever, was always a competitive situation. And she went to the park board and said, there are a lot of things you can do, and even incorporating whole families and have fun times, and I wish you'd offer something like that. There isn't anything I'm comfortable signing my kids up for. And the park board said, we'll offer it if you're willing to figure it out. So she and her husband put together a program, and it was a family activity, and it involved games, new games and non-competitive things. And maybe that's what we have to do. We just go out and speak your mind, and, you know, might make a little work for yourself, but that never hurt anybody. So this is a good book, and there are follow-ups to this that are real fun. I noticed a picture in here of a water slide. I know we went to the water slide in Chelan on our way up here, and our kids thought it was so wonderful that we would do that with them. We could spend many hours just really having a lot of fun without anybody winning or losing. It took a little money, however.
I want to just piggyback on what you're saying. One of my neighbors has written a book on peacemaking for families. And you may have it there. I don't know. Her name is Jackie Casey. Have you seen it? It's a small one. At any rate, she talks about the whole concept of competition in our society, not just in games. But she also differentiates between positive and negative competition. She doesn't consider all competition to be negative. But she goes into a lot of ways that we can, I mean, even in schools, in terms of grades or in terms of how somebody does on a test or whatever there is about, it can be easily pitted.
What's the name of the book?
I'm trying to remember. I think it's Family Peacemaking. I have a copy of her medical. It's not a real thick book. It's a couple years old. But the other, she has all kinds of suggestions and games in that book also. And it, but it deals with other kinds of things that people can do as well. It's not limited to just games and whatever covers and writes certain things.
Well, there are like a lot of
birthday parties and how to do things at birthday parties that tend to build people's self-confidence rather than, you know, the game playing. One of the suggestions she had was, and I used it for a child's birthday party and it really worked well, where they made their own placemats with their hand on it and they wrote their name across the center of the hand. And these are obviously for younger children. Not that young that they can't write, but. And then you pass your hand around and each child writes something positive or something they know about you that's a gift that you have that they see. And that went off, and everybody writes something on the hand. And at first I thought, you know, this won't work, these kids won't do this, but they really did. And it was a very, you know what was neat about it is when each one got their hand back and read what people wrote on it. It was sort of like, it was like these kids had a new image of themselves, of how they presented themselves to other people, and it made it feel good. And I was really surprised at that.
There are a lot of resources like that book that, that's a terrific idea, and somebody like me doesn't dream up an idea like that all by myself. And so it's really helpful to find those kinds of books. Another thing that we can do is encourage the kids to, through stories, to develop peacemakers as heroes. Too much of the history glorifies the war maker as the hero, and hearing stories about peace heroes can help them see that often peacemaking takes even more moral courage than waging war. These stories can also help them realize that peace can be just as much a cause for which to live and die as is war. And there are some wonderful children's stories like that. My favorite maybe is Sadako and the Thousand Paper Cranes. And Hiroshima Day is coming up on August 6th. And this is about a little girl who was a victim of the bomb in Hiroshima. And she, 10 years later, developed leukemia and died. But she was told, if a sick person folds 1,000 paper cranes, the gods will grant her wish and make her well again. And then this person handed her the first paper crane. So Sadako had folded 644 cranes before she died. The flock hung above her bed on strings, and then her classmates folded the rest. And she's become a heroine to the children in Japan, and it's a lovely little story in chapter form that could be read to the kids. This is a Dell book. It's only $1.95.
It's in the library also.
Yeah,
and you can learn to make the peace cranes. In fact, they have a program in class in there. You'll see them hanging up in the craft shop.
Yeah, they're probably getting some ready now because Wednesday will be here at Holden, Hiroshima Day. And she's just a real inspiration. I mean, this is a 12-year-old child who could be a hero for your kids as opposed to He-Man and Teela. You could have somebody like this. Or there's Anne Frank. It's a lovely, lovely story of courage and hero of someone who believed in peace. And there are other books like Clara Barton, The Gentle Warrior, and here's a book on Dorothy Day, Friend of the Poor. And it's written for children, and maybe they don't want to know all these things, but maybe they do. Maybe they need to know about people like this. And it could be done in little bits and pieces, you know. It doesn't have to be crammed down their throats, or just have it around. That's another important thing. Have peace materials around. So maybe they'll pick it up, or maybe you can read a chapter a night. Acquaint them with these people, or with Gandhi. Or here's another neat little book for $1.95 for kids on Thomas Merton, the monk with the mission. And it's all about him, even as a little boy. It makes him a real person. And what an incredible person he became. Mrs. Merton wanted her son to be an independent, creative, and original person. Little did she know just how independent, creative, and original he was to become. It's a neat, neat book. Or there are a couple in the bookstore in Francis of Assisi, several different kinds. So there's a lot of possibilities.
There's a book in the bookstore called My Peace Be With You by Cornelia Lane.
I've got that. This one? Yes.
Yeah, it's nothing but short vignettes of peacemakers, mm-hmm. The whole book.
Some of them are from the Bible, and some of them are from...
I have to tell you, though, I read some of those to my children, and one kid said at supper time one night, she said, I don't remember which one, said, you know, all those peacemakers got killed. So
in these,
you know,
stories,
maybe it was just the ones I chose or whatever, but some of them were being peacemakers, not unlike Dr. Martin Luther King or somebody like Bishop Romero.
There's like Corrie Ten Boom or Rosa Parks. She's still alive. And what an inspiration. And these are just... they could be done one a night. They're just short. And people, I mean, it'd be interesting to me. I don't know about all these people. Martin Luther King. Really a nice, nice book. I'm so impressed. I love books anyway, but I don't have to look very far or hard to find some real good material. Got a couple more points, and then I'd like the rest of you to share some things. Another important thing is to encourage autonomy. Children need to be encouraged to be persons of their own. And the willingness for parents to stand back and let their children experiment on their own and think for themselves gives a child not only a sense of competency, but also one of social responsibility. And that's hard to do sometimes, but I'm real pleased, I guess, when you find out that your child has done something, you know, on their own without you prompting them or telling them. I'm always surprised, which isn't very nice, but kids are people and they're neat, so we've got to give them credit. Handling conflicts is a biggie, and Stephanie Judson has some real good ideas on how to handle conflict. But children need not only to be taught not to use violence as a solution for their problems, they must also be led to see that sometimes they can create violence in others while they apparently remain nonviolent. And this is interesting. I've got three kids, and when there's fighting going on, it's interesting. Some are quite blatant and bold about it, but then there's one who's very quiet, but he's creating his own trouble. If conflict is not handled creatively, it can develop into violence in others. Children are adept at this. They may not fight themselves, but they will provoke a playmate to fighting so that he or she gets pushed. To be prepared to be peaceful citizens of the world of the 20th century, American children are going to have to be taught to recognize when they are provoking another person or nation to violence, says Barbara Stanford. She writes, A Guide to Conflict Resolution for Individuals, Groups, and Nations. They will have to learn to take responsibility not only for fighting first or shooting the first missile, but also for creating the conflict which led to the violence, or refusing to deal with the conflict before it became so desperate that it led to violence. And peace education is more how people solve their problems than a debate about whether you use weapons or not. Problem solving is real important when you're dealing with two-year-olds right up to the leaders of nations. If we learn to do it right when we're two, we're going to be... things will turn out okay. Power is a big issue with kids, and that's really why they bug one another. We need to get them to want to see they also have the power to make others feel good. You don't have to be powerful by irritating somebody all the time. You have it in yourself to make them feel good, and therefore that makes you feel good. But we get so caught up in trying to break up the fights, we forget to emphasize the positive sides of some of this stuff. I'd really like you to, maybe I can pass some of these things around. I also have an address here that I could share with you. It's a thing called Alternatives, and I believe the ALC puts it out. But it deals with holidays, all sorts of holidays, from Valentine's Day to whatever, and viewing every single holiday in the light of peace and justice, and how you can, either in your church or as you teach or in your family, take that holiday, which it might be secular, like Valentine's Day or whatever, and make something peaceful out of it. Lots of neat materials are available. I think they have a catalog or whatever.
I don't think it comes out of the ALC office. I think it's a private thing because I have the catalogs.
Okay.
But they are marvelous because they have all kinds of wonderful suggestions and
could be incorporated for parties, birthday parties.
Yeah, it isn't limited to holidays at all. It's limited to everyday life. In fact, one time for a birthday party, I asked my daughter what she wanted to give a child. And we had been, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Heifer Project International. And she said, well, this girl's mother said that there wouldn't be any birthday gifts, not to bring a gift. And Tasha was more comfortable with that. And I said, well, what would you like to do that would be really special? And she said, I know what Amy would like. She would like to send a bunch of chickens to somebody. And so we made a donation, and the child was delighted. So there are all kinds of suggestions like that.
Do any of the rest of you have any suggestions on things that you have done or you know about that encourage the children to be more conscious in their own little worlds, or else on a broader scale too? They can be involved even in letter writing if that's something you want to do. Like if you didn't like the Rambo doll or the cereal, or whether it's you don't like what your congressmen are doing, discuss it with your kids and maybe they'll be concerned enough to want to join in or add a little note or whatever. And they're apt to get response back, which a kid really likes. And it's kind of giving them the idea that there are things that can be done, and people will at least listen to your opinion. Have any other suggestions, things you can do with your kids?
One of the things we did at our church was a Peace Crane project that came out of reading the book about Sadako. There is a Peace Crane project through the we have a peace office of peace in the ALC, and I'm sure LCA must have one too. But anyway, the Lutheran Peace Crane project was where churches or children or whoever wanted to make peace cranes. And the initial project was to get 9 million cranes, I think it was 1.9 million cranes to rush to Moscow, one for every child in Moscow. And those were taken over last June, I believe. But the project is still going on. But just learning to make a peace crane is an interesting project, especially when coupled with the story from actually, the kids learn it very quickly. We're the ones who
I learned today.
Did you make one?
Well, kind of.
You have to make at least three before you remember how to do it, at least.
Yeah.
Or they also make neat decorations for your church. They're nice to hand out if the kids are doing a program or some special event.
Or another thing they can be encouraged to do is find a pen pal in another country so they learn about other cultures, or take them sometime to Mexico. Or, you know, my kids were just bug-eyed when we went to Mexico. They'll never forget it, how hot and dirty and grubby and the little children running around begging and how they didn't dare drink the water. And, you know, you can hear about that sort of thing or see it on television, but it's real when you walk down those hot streets. So there are things that can be done. I guess the major thing is just to be aware, and hopefully you learned a little bit about being more aware. I certainly don't have a lot of answers, and my home is far from the most peaceful in the world, but we try, and that's all we can do. And Sonia Johnston has said we're an adapting society, but I don't think we have to be. We need to try.